If you're going to ask, since I'm not there yet,
it'll do it.
Wait. Why are we only looking at Aptima Combo 2 and Probetech? Why didn't we look at Amplicore? We did, and we had to stop it because of false positives with GC detection. So the specificity of that test was completely inadequate. This is a reanalysis of some studies we did a number of years ago because people keep raising the issue of what is the specificity of the NATs and what are the false positive rates in different populations. And my goal here is to convince you that you can really believe positive NATs, not only from the sites that you are testing in other populations like vaginal swabs, cervical swabs, urethral specimens, but that the specimens from the oropharynx and rectum from ASM can also be validly tested. Obviously, both organisms are found in the oropharynx and the rectum, and NATs, which are our best laboratory tool for diagnosing these infections, are unfortunately not FDA cleared. So we, as other interested labs, as you're hearing here, have had to do our own validations for these, and we're going to talk today about the false positives. Now, in 2002, CDC came up with some recommendations about confirmatory testing, which is, I think, not necessary. But we have followed these recommendations to show that they're not necessary. And so we have done things like get a second specimen, do multiple testing on a single specimen, repeat the original test, use different tests, different targets, etc. In this particular study, we studied 1,100 men who were attending the STD clinic in San Francisco. We got a single swab put into M4, which is a universal transport medium, which is cleared for use with all of the NATs and for culture, for chlamydia. The deficiency in that aspect is it reduces the sensitivity of our tests because we have to take smaller aliquots out of a single tube to do the other tests. And we did, with all the positives, confirmatory testing. We tested all of the specimens with all of the assays that we were using, and then we did repeat tests on the positives, and we did crossovers, and then we did alternate primer assays. The specificities were calculated on confirmed positives being true positives. The Aptima Combo 2 in this setting, as in virtually every other setting we've ever looked at, detects more positives than the other commercially available NATs. The biggest deficiency we have in evaluating this data set is that oropharyngeal chlamydial infections are relatively uncommon, so that we tested over 1,000 men and we only had 10 positives. So it's you're going to have to do a lot of studies to get enough men with oropharyngeal chlamydia to evaluate anything in a meaningful way. With GC, we were talking about higher infection rates, and the data, I think, are more reliable. The ultimate bottom line is that you can confirm greater than 90% of all of the positives. Here are the results looking at Probetech, the strand displacement assay, and as you can see, there were only 6 oropharyngeal positives. There were 43 rectal positives for chlamydia. For GC, there were 69 and 70 positives, respectively. And ultimately, the great majority, all of the chlamydial infections and over 90%, 94 and 99%, respectively, of the oropharyngeal and rectal GC infections were confirmed. There have been populations where there are problems with GC in the Probetech assay because it does pick up some commensals. We have seen this in some populations. We did not see it in this population. So in this specific population, these results were reliable. The results with the Aptima test, there are more positives being detected for each of these. And again, over 90% of all of them are being confirmed. The calculated specificities are greater than 99.6%. This basically means your PPVs are going to be quite high in any kind of population that you would be likely to test. And if you are going to be testing any population where 99.6% specificity is not good enough, you shouldn't be testing that population. Our conclusions, you can confirm these, you can believe the results. All of the calculated specificities are quite high. And you don't have to use any of these specific algorithms. I don't really think it's worth doing confirmatory testing. Thank you.
That was short and sweet, absolutely. Any questions?
These truths are self-evident. Yeah, it's in the paper. I don't have data broken down in this particular way, but it really can't make a difference. About half of the men were symptomatic and about half of them were asymptomatic, and there are some differences. We actually got more chlamydia out of asymptomatic men than we did symptomatic men, and you know, that kind of thing. But in terms of the specificity, it made no difference. Was there any data collected on treatment?
After treatment, what happens to
the positive yields? Okay. What you're basically asking, or what I think you really want to ask, is how long does a positive stay positive after someone is treated? And the answer is, I don't know. That's a study that really, you know, should be done and has been done, and it's never been done well.
Okay.
So I really would suggest that any of you who have got the bucks to do this and the right population should do it. We could use the information.
Absolutely. Would you like to yell? It doesn't work.
No. The issue for them is not that the test can't be done. It's that they have not gotten it validated and cleared. So you could, for example, from a technical viewpoint, collect a swab, put it in the aptometer medium, and do it. And it works. But they would be violating the law, and the FDA would come down on them in a very big way if they did it. So they can't offer it. So it's not they can't do it, they can't offer it. I will simply tell you, as far as I am concerned, the FDA right now is standing in the way of good public health work by us. It's not their fault. It's the rules that they have to live by. But we don't have clearance to use this test with rectal swabs, with oropharyngeal swabs. You cannot use self-collected vaginal swabs unless they're collected in a clinic. That's wrong. It's a public health imperative, I think, for us to get this, because more than half of the men, the MSM, who have chlamydial and gonococcal infections don't have urethral infections. They have an infection of the rectum or the oropharynx, and we have no efficient legal way of doing it, unless you've got a lab that does its own validations and stuff like that, and most of us don't have access to that. Long, long answer to a short question.
Sure.
Sorry.
And just to sort of vindicate my employer, could you possibly share with the audience what happened at the recent last year's laboratory guidelines meeting, revisiting this question of comparability.
Yeah, oh, that's true. And you can actually see this. There's an APHL website that contains the information.
Yeah.
The guidelines came out in 2002 and said the PPVs, positive predictive values, which are very, they are a function of both prevalence and specificity of a test. So in a low prevalence population, if you had 1% positives and 1% false positives, because it was 99% specific, it would be 50%. Flip a coin. They said that's not good enough. So you should confirm all the positives. Well, it turns out confirming doesn't work, and the tests are better than 1% false positives. So 8 years later, in January, I believe it was, of 2010, CDC convened a meeting. 2009, that's right, yeah. It's only taken a few short months to get this published. Oh, God. Anyway, so the APHL has a website. You can read this. What the group that was making the recommendations said, the specimens of choice for diagnosing chlamydial and gonococcal infections are urines from men, first catch urine, and vaginal swabs from women. That confirmatory testing is not useful because it does not improve over the result you obtained the first time. Okay? So believe that first result, recognize it's not always right. But there's nothing you can do in the lab to improve on that. Okay?
Thank you. Thanks very
much. Thank you.